Go hackers, welcome to the CS Justice podcast, also Acolyte edition, but going to be discussing more at length, specifically just Q&A. The amount of Acolyte questions that we've been getting is, well, it's quite large. It's freaking huge, actually. What's up, Jordan? So, and also we recently updated a lot of Acolyte videos inside of the Acolyte membership area in our membership at csjoseph.life /portal for the Acolyte members. And it's getting really cluttered in there. So we just decided, all right, yeah, there's nothing wrong with us like creating a stream and doing video responses for to these questions directly with the stream. Some of these streams may be public. Some of them may actually be private. So we're just making some adjustments with how we're approaching the Acolytes because there's just a lot of questions. Like an insane amount of questions. So we are trying to make sure that we are keeping up with all those questions and making those streams available to the Acolyte members. This particular stream will be made publicly available, but future streams are likely not going to be, and we might do it every now and then to remind people that we do this, but for the most part, this is just kind of a one-off Q&A based on questions that Acolyte members are actually asking. So just throwing that out there so that people understand how this stream actually works. So yeah, also got my trusty new lighter. So we'll see how it goes. Oh yeah, it's a freaking torch, man. Oh yeah. Love it. So much better than my other torch. Holy smokes. I love it. And the flavor is exquisite. So. Oh, Simran, that was a live only. It will not be reposted. That being said, if you would like to potentially have limited access to it, open a ticket and see what happens. Who knows? Ka-chow. All right, so we have a crap ton of questions, so we're going to get through it. And then also, we're going to be writing down the timestamps as we go. So, yeah. All right, dope. So, first question is, how do I help an ENTP feel more comfortable with me? How do you gain their trust? Oh, this is a La Raña Azulejo made by Espinosa. It's excellent. Very exquisite. Blueberry notes. So yeah, but how do you make an ENTP feel more comfortable with me? How do you gain their trust? Okay, so it depends. Are we talking like ENTP woman or ENTP man? Like that entirely matters. Have you identified their feminine primary function or their masculine primary function? That'd be the next question I would ask. In order to really understand that, you should really get familiar with universal compatibility theory. And there are now two places that you can actually go to understand universal compatibility theory. The first is our Discord server at discord.gg/egohackers. Dang. I don't know why. What's wrong with the stream? Like, it's kind of stream's a little unstable. Oh, looks like we're going to get a warning. Yes, hello.
It's offline.
Oh, okay, cool. It came back, just apparently the router must be unstable or something. I have no idea. Okay. Our router doesn't like very many devices on it. If it happens again, I'll just take this device right off the local router. Like, there's no point. Like, this thing can stream as is without being on the local Wi-Fi anyway, so who cares? So, yeah. Anyway. Understand universal compatibility theory, and obviously Cutting Edge, November 2023, which is the newest Cutting Edge episode we actually released in the Journeyman members at csjoseph.life/members. You can become a Journeyman member to watch that Cutting Edge podcast episode, where we actually introduce universal compatibility theory, which has just fundamentally transformed the science as we know it. The thing is that in order to be effective at universal compatibility theory, you have to know their type accurately and you have to know their octagram, which is extremely difficult. But we are going to be releasing resources in the near future to update the companion guide to help you all with universal compatibility theory. So, yeah. Anyway, so you know, feminine primary, masculine functions, masculine primary functions, like this matters because like if the ENTP is a man or a woman, basically, if they're a man or a woman, that changes the game. That changes your entire approach, like big time. Because from that point of view, it's like, because ENTP men need something different than ENTP women. Into much detail here. So I'm actually going to kind of move the goalpost a little bit and answer this from the perspective of just a straight nature point of view. Because this would have an answer from a nature point of view and an octogram point of view and a universal compatibility theory point of view, basically. But how do you help an ENTP get more comfortable with them? Well, first things first, you have, okay, orbit access and reflection. You need to focus on their introverted sensing function. So to do that, you need to hit their axis. So first things first, you make the ENTP feel wanted, right? That's the first step. Second step is that you're going to have to hit their orbit. And you need to make sure the ENTP understands or knows that they are not, that you are not being cringed out by them, basically. That they are not bothering you, basically. That you find them entirely acceptable, right? Another thing is that you do not inhibit their personal freedom. This is where you start considering their God functions. God functions of introverted intuition, as well as God functions of extroverted feeling. You have to make sure the ENTP knows that not only are they acceptable to you, but you really actually like them, which also hits their extroverted feeling child at the same time. But then also you need to make sure you're not ever taking their freedom of choice. So in general, that's just like a basic foundation primer for, you know, how to impact an ENTP's nature to make them more comfortable. But looking at their octogram, it depends on what octogram they are, okay? So if they're SDSF, that octogram, they're looking for two helpings of satisfaction, one helping of, or no, three helpings of satisfaction, no helpings of reverence. And then you have their UDSF and SDSF, they're looking for two helpings of satisfaction, one helping of reverence. And then you have the UDUF ENTP, which is two helpings of reverence and one helping of satisfaction origin. So obviously from an octogram perspective, you need to make you need to go out of your way to make sure you are as satisfying as possible to the ENTP and showing them consistent respect. That way both of their cognitive origins are handled regardless of their octogram variant. And that's the quickest way to ensure that you're in good with the ENTP at that point in time. Let me give you some examples of what dissatisfaction looks like. If you're a woman and you're in a relationship with an ENTP man and you allow yourself to get fat, you are not satisfying. Okay. If letting your body go, that's a no-go. Letting your hair go, that's a no-go. Like all those physical things like very much matter to an ENTP. Why do you think their golden pair or their pedagogue relationship, their highest sexual compatibility is extroverted sensing inferior, where those people are afraid of failure. They're afraid of being fat. They're afraid of being ugly. You see what I'm saying? It's because they're built to be with SI inferiors who have like insanely high standards for that. You know what I'm saying? And that's where that comes from. That's where that comes from entirely. Like, so like extroverted sensing inferior women, you know, you're gonna have to like, you know, handle that, you know, and extroverted sensing inferior men, you always have that male burden of performance. You need to make sure that you're meeting their needs, emotions, desires, and problems consistently that ENTPs have. You know, ENTPs oftentimes have this pride complex where they try to solve their own problems. And the reason why they try to solve their own problems is because they don't trust you to solve their problems. Oh shit. You know, that thing that, you know, men should like be careful with, you know, don't let that happen. You know, if your ENTP woman is trying to solve her own problems, you've basically failed as a man. Congratulations. You played yourself. So don't even do that. ENTPs are compatible with, they're mostly compatible with INTJs, INFJs, ISFPs, ENTJs, out of the most, but octogram variant can actually adjust this because certain octograms should be with other octograms. And depending on what their gender is, what their octogram is, what their type is, you can actually have an insanely highly compatible relationship even with your benefactor. So the benefactor relationship with the ENTP is an ENFJ. There's actually a huge chance for the ENFJ to actually work out. Very huge chance. Although, in my case, being UDSF as an ENTP, and if I was to get with an ENFJ, that ENFJ would have to be UDUF. And I'm just thinking to myself, wow, in order for me to have a relationship with an ENFJ woman, it would have to be most likely that she has borderline personality disorder, because that's usually a side effect of UDUF, because UDUF people all have complex PTSD in some capacity that I've noticed. And to have like a relationship with an ENFJ woman, you know, in my current state as a UDSF ENTP, she'd have to be UDUF, which means she is at risk. She already has PTSDC, and it's kind of like a trauma bond. And at the same time, like, there's a risk of her having like borderline personality disorder. And I'm just like, oh my God, is this worth it? You know what I'm saying? Because her feminine primary function is extroverted thinking, which matches my introverted thinking masculine primary function, you know, so, which means that, you know, there could actually be some kind of relationship there. But otherwise, I'm just like, that's a little risky. You know what I'm saying? It's a little risky, especially after you read Rational Male Volume 5 and the final chapter talks about, hey, by the way, just letting you know, dude, you should avoid relationships with women who have borderline personality disorder. And, you know, guess what? I actually have personal experience in that. And I would like to always avoid, borderline personality disorder. Diocese, it's actually a high amount of caffeine, like the one time this week I allowed myself to have a high amount of caffeine and tobacco simultaneously, which is actually a stim, so I'm actually quite stimmed. And I'll probably crash before the end of the show, just letting you know, bro. All right, so let's see here. Oh, and I'm an ENTP. Come on, man. You know what I'm saying? Now, the second part of this question is, how do you gain their trust? And this actually really matters a lot. This matters a lot. How do you... Oh, my God. Stop. There we go. How do you gain ENTP's trust? So ENTPs have this problem where they give trust checks. ENTP trust checks. Every ENTP does this. And it's kind of like they'll do this thing where they will share private information about themselves with you to see if you will share private information about yourself with them. From their perspective, it's all about mutually assured destruction. It's like, hey, you know, ENTPs have this thing where they will give trust entirely upfront to somebody. They will just lead with trust. They will give 100% trust upfront, almost to the point of risking being gullible with somebody. The ENTP will lead with trust. The thing is that they're so sensitive with trust because they'll give all their trust upfront with their extroverted feeling child. But if a person like actually has this issue where it's like, oh, hey, you know, I broke your trust, and they let's say they violate the ENTP's trust, the ENTP will never give that trust back because ENTPs have this all or nothing attitude. It's because of heart temple, God function of introverted intuition, and just how heart temple is so passionate and easily gets attached to people. Heart temple, especially a UDSF ENTP like myself, because an SDSF ENTP has the seductive style of the coquette, for example, but the UDSF ENTP actually has the seductive style of the rake, okay? So it's a little different, and understanding feminine primary functions versus masculine primary functions in ENTPs entirely matters because it actually changes their seductive style. In fact, it even changes how they have sex, actually. Like their kinks. It manages their kinks entirely. So anyway, the point is that if you want to get the ENTP's trust, you have to learn how to expose yourself to the ENTP entirely, to the point where they even have that they would actually have the opportunity to destroy your reputation, maybe even blackmail you. Who knows? But that's literally what it takes. You being at risk of being blackmailed or publicly shamed or embarrassed, that's what it takes to get the trust of an ENTP. And once, to keep the trust of an ENTP, you know, and that's just how it works. So anyway, that definitely finishes that particular question. Let's actually move on to the next one. Awesome. Okay. So the next one is, how do relationships based on bonds differ from transactional relationships? Okay, so this is a soul temple question. It says cognitive origin of connection, also known as intimacy. So how do relationships based on bonds differ from transactional relationships? So what this basically means is that a transactional relationship is known as an attachment, okay? It is transactional. Attachments, you know, you read that book called Attached, and I know I'm down on it all the time, but don't read that book Attached. Like, attachment, you know, oh, that's your attachment style. Look, all attachment. I don't care your attachment style, but all attachment is wrong. All attachment style is wrong. I read that book Attached. It's funny, like, one of my exes, like, tried to get me to read that book, and I did read it, and I was entirely just unimpressed. I was just like, wow, like, who cares? This is not going to work. So, and with that, I'm just like, Attachments are dumb because attachments are one-way street relationships where when you get attached to somebody, you're having someone drain. And that's why it's become transactional, where this other person is taking from you and you're giving to them and you're giving to them and giving, and they're just taking and taking and taking, and they're not reciprocating. Now, this happens in a lot of ways. It can happen at the natural level. So, like, for example, a Templar type who has... All right, that should work. What's going on? Yeah, it should be back now, though. Is it?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, anyway, time, attention, resources. And it's usually Templar types that are giving time, attention, resources. Also, Crusader types can do it, but FE usage in general end up giving time, attention, and resources to people that they're attached to, with Templars having the Templar types, ENFJ, ESTP, INFJ, ISTP types, having the highest risk of... doing that to other people and giving time, attention, resources to other people. And they end up getting attached, and it's because they're so scared of abandonment, because no Templar type likes or wants to be unliked or disliked by others or abandoned by others. So they end up feeding the attachment. They end up feeding the attachment they have, and it's entirely unhealthy, and they're just being drained and taken advantage of, and they have no clue. This is why attachments are bad. They're evil. So what you end up having to do as an FE user, especially a Templar type, you need to have a relationship, basically, where you are giving just as much as you are receiving, and that's known as a bond, okay? We've talked about this many, many times. But in terms of how it works between men and women, those kinds of relationships, this is very key. We talk about how women, when they're in their feminine communication, have to express needs, emotions, desires, and problems. And they're taught how to do this in our women's group. If you'd like to ask... Ollie or Stephanie, which is spelled Stefani, just letting you guys know. And then join the women's group. And then once you're there, learn feminine communication, check the requirements channel, and just go through all the requirements, and you will learn feminine communication over time. So anyway, can I keep this live after it's over? No, actually, this live stream will be pulled down. If you want to watch it, you'll have to become an Acolyte member. So just letting you know. It will be pulled down ahead of time. So, like, what you're watching is this ain't gonna stay up. It ain't gonna stay up. All of these Acolyte streams from now on, they're just gonna be pulled down. So, fair warning. Fair warning. Good question, though. Discord.gg/egohackers. That is the Discord link. Go there. All right. So, anyway. Women are taught feminine communication, needs, emotions, desires, and problems, and communicating that to a man. It's also a litmus test that a woman uses towards a man. If I express my needs, emotions, desires, and problems to a man, but he does nothing about it, then he is not masculine. He should not be in my life. But here's the issue, though. What ends up happening is that ends up leading to an attachment relationship for men. For men. Where the women are getting their needs, emotions, desires, and problems met by men, except the women are ignoring the fifth expression of their femininity, which is expressions of gratitude and appreciation in the form of action. Okay, I'm getting tired of the leg. I'm getting very tired of the leg. We're fixing that right now. Let's stay here. Leg fix. All right. Back yet? Are we back? All right, we're back. Cool. Thank you. Switch networks. It shouldn't happen again. The network I'm on now has actually like been stable for like as long as I've been using it. So this should be going away. Anyway, the point is that men end up having this thing where they're being sucked dry by women because of attachment, basically. And if a woman doesn't know how to express her gratitude or appreciation, if she doesn't know how to reciprocate to the man, basically what ends up happening is the relationship falls apart because it's an attachment. It's not actually a bond. It's not a bond. So women have to learn how to express appreciation and gratitude. Like, this is a male litmus test. This is the thing. If a man gives a woman It's okay. They go up to a woman and they give her time, attention, and resources, right? Like buying her a drink at the bar, okay? To prove her femininated, two-risk contract is okay because this covert contract is expected between the masculine and the feminine. If the masculine gives a woman time, attention, and resources, she is obligated to reciprocate to him, to give him thanks, to give him gratitude, right? It's just kind of, let's see. It might be interference from this. Let me see. I'm going to turn off that. Okay. So there's no interference. I think it might be interference from that device. So I just took it off the network. So it's not broadcasting. Is that my help? Is that helping?
Yeah. Wait, which device?
This thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because
it seems fine now.
Okay, well, just keep me posted, man.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I got to repeat everything I said again. I feel like an idiot right now. All right. Apparently, the internet is just not doing really well tonight. I have no idea. All right, to repeat everything that. Now, Chase, repeat everything you ever said. Question is, how do relationships based on that men, that women often drain men with transactional relationships? Okay, it's still lagging. Are you sure you're just not caught up, Kia? Like, come on. You guys sure about that? God damn.
All
right.
That's all. Yeah, why basically?
Yeah, I have no clue, man.
This is rare. This is what happened.
It has never happened before. Let me see. Let me get rid of all these applications. Just keep me posted, guys. This is annoying. Plus, I'm keeping track of timestamps too, so like, don't worry about it. So, does it seem stable?
Oh. You're online finally again.
Okay, I'm online finally again. Okay, cool. Yep. As I bore my audience with tech issues.
If it buffers again, we'll restart the stream.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, guys. So, if we buffer one more time, then we're gonna just restart with a completely fresh stream on the landline and just continue right where we left off. It's just no big deal. Like, so give you guys a heads up on that. So yeah. Okay. Anyway. To get right back where I was one more time. Hopefully it doesn't disconnect again. But just please, guys, just let me know right in the chat if you're having issues. Just state it. Okay. All right. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that men have this litmus test towards women to see if whether or not the women are going to have transactional relationships with them. So that transactional relationship is based on whether or not a man who gives time and attention and resources, if the woman will honor those time, attention, and resources that he gives her. She's obligated to prove her femininity, basically. And by doing so, she has to reciprocate to the man. She is required to reciprocate gratitude and appreciation to the man who's giving her time, attention, and resources. That could be as something as small as buying her a drink at the bar. She is required to reciprocate. So what a woman has to do, because she should know, the mature feminine should teach her the requirement of honoring this covert contract, basically, she has to reject the man right off the bat and inhibit him from even having the opportunity to give time and attention and resources to her ahead of time. If she doesn't do that, she's basically what we call a shit woman. She's a shit woman at that point. Oh, no. Okay, cool. I'm not getting trolled right now. But yeah, she's what we call a shit woman because, like, for example, someone actually posted this in the men's group recently, like this text chat with a girl talking about, oh yeah, you know, if I'm alone and hungry on a night, I just go on Tinder, match with a couple of guys, and have them take me out to dinner and have a nice date, and then I just go home afterwards, you know, with like no reciprocation whatsoever. Reciprocation being sex, you know what I'm saying? And that's the thing. So you as a woman, especially if like you're not a virgin, you need to make sure that you just, you know, when a man gives you time, attention, and resources, that you just shut it down if you're not actually intending to reciprocate. If you have no intention to reciprocate, don't take from a man. Otherwise, you're a shit woman, basically. And you'll end up getting that reputation, and men will know, and then eventually you're destroying your reputation. It's going to be a huge, huge problem. And you're basically acting like a pump and dump, basically. But this is an example of a transactional relationship instead of an actual bond. If you're a woman, you're not interested in forming a real bond with a man, don't take anything from men. Don't take any time, attention, or resources. That's just the reality of the situation. Because again, you are obligated to give gratitude and appreciation as the fifth expression of femininity. Because like, for example, if you're just taking from a man, you're actually not being a woman. You're not even being feminine. You're just being entitled. You're being a narcissist, essentially. So stop being a narcissist and let it go. Like don't even be a narcissist. So it's a big deal. So anyway, okay. So right now, guys, we're doing this course promotion right now. It's called How to Type Yourself, where you learn how to type people using the TypeGrid and all of my techniques for TypeGrid, including I'm even going to be touching on visual typing and giving some examples of that, as well as how to type people with their octogram, which is absolutely critical. That is critical. And in the masterclass, we're probably also going to be talking a little bit about UCT, which is also very important. And because we're going to be giving a little bit of social engineering information. We may even actually put UCT in the course, actually, because it's just that important. And the masterclass is basically a very large Q&A session where you get on a call with me. Basically, it'll be hosted on our Discord, a private Discord call. We'll be streaming it privately. And you could show me photos of people or profiles, like social media profiles, and we'll psychoanalyze those profiles together, basically, or psychoanalyze maybe even members of your family, et cetera, to see what type they are and why, or do guided tours through Ucha, basically, during the stream, you know, and we'll try to pack as many people as we can within a two-hour period. We might even go overtime outside of that two-hour period just to make sure that everybody, you know, is trying to get as much out of it as they can so they can learn as much, and then that way there's enough stored examples of proper psychoanalysis within this masterclass so that you all can utilize that as a standard with which you can behave from a psychoanalysis perspective. So how do you guys get in on the pre-order of this course? It's howtotypeyourself.com. Go to howtotypeyourself.com, howtotypeyourself.com, and then get the course, basically. And then after you buy it, the next page will try to attempt to sell you the masterclass and so on and so forth. Get it now because the pre-order pricing, it's very good, but the price is going to go way up. I believe it's going to double. I believe the price will actually double. That's like a big deal. So get the pre-order in now. It should be going live in a couple of weeks, and then you guys can enjoy the course. And the masterclass should be about 4 weeks after the course releases, while everyone understands the concepts in the course and gets practice so that we can get the absolute best out of the masterclass. So that's howtotypeyourself.com. Check that out. It's really important. Howtotypeyourself.com. Get in on that course. It's probably going to be the most important course that we ever offer other than Ego Hacking Your Fear, because howtotypeyourself.com, how to type yourself as a course, it's just going to be teaching the fundamentals plus some of the intermediate and the advanced level techniques of like typing, like basically what goes through my mind when I'm looking at somebody, and it's all super quick. Because, like, you know, let's be honest, I'm basically the Rain Bolt of psychoanalysis, essentially. You guys have seen me live on the street typing people in seconds, okay? And the reason I'm able to do that, I'm literally, you know, like Rain Bolt, you know, doing that with how he does GeoGuessr in that game. So if you want to actually learn those techniques, you're going to want to get this course. So, yeah, howtotypeyourself.com. All right, so let's see here, 32 minutes and 25 seconds, and let's get that in here. 32:25. Oh my God. Oh my God. No. No. No.
someone asked a good question.
Oh, they asked a good question. Thank God. I thought you were telling me I was buffering again.
Does reciprocation always mean sex? And people like that question.
No. No, reciprocation does not always mean sex. But if you're in a situation where you're going on a date with a man and you're like a non-virgin woman, like, honestly, I mean, you have a choice to not give it up on the first night and not be like a same night lay, only if you're absolutely sure, like, you know, perhaps that, you know, this guy's not going to pump and dump you. But like what we teach the men in the men's group, this is very important. What we teach in the men's group is that thou shalt not have sex with a woman unless you plan on taking a bullet for her, or unless you plan on keeping her, basically. So we teach our men, you know, in terms of their masculine idealism, if you're going to have sex with a woman, you should always at least have commitment on the table until such time she acts in a way where you as a man have full rights to put her in the sex-only category. Because men have two categories for women. Two categories, and those two categories are sex-only category or commitment category. And if you find out that this woman that you're seeing or whatever is behaving in such a way where she's moved into the sex-only category, it's basically your responsibility as a man to just kind of let her know that. You know what I'm saying? That's proper masculinity, because it's known as managed polygyny. Unmanaged polygyny, polygyny being the sexual strategy of men. If you're pumping and dumping women, you're a shit man. It's that simple, right? You're a shit woman if you're taking time, attention, and resources from men without reciprocation. But you are a shit man if you are pumping and dumping women. Like, seriously. So you have to understand is that, like, okay, you're going into, like, a date, for example, with the intention of having something that's more than just a pump and dump, right? And that is, okay, commitment is on the table. You have that on the table. But if the woman acts in such a way where you can't commit to her, but there's a chance that she's still down with like having sex with you or whatever, it'd just be like, okay, yeah, sure, we could smash and whatnot, but guess what? You're in the sex-only category. And like, you'll be surprised because honestly, like, you know, the women that you tell that to, like 8 out of 10 of them, like I've noticed, are totally okay with being in the sex-only category. It's so weird. It's weird, but it's a fact. Like, it's a thing. I have personal experience in that. I also have other people in the men's group who have had personal experience with that. Because if you just make it clear, because that's just how you roll, then fine, go ahead and do that. So, but you know, it's. Another way for reciprocating is if a woman offers to pay. You know, that is a way you can reciprocate. Not all men are going to go for that, though. Like, seriously. So you just got to feel out your man. You got to know, and honestly, you should be accurately typing him, and you should be accurately understanding his nature and his nurture. What is his type? What is his octogram? Okay. And then knowing that, you instantly are able to type his masculine primary function and meet that, basically. And then also, like, are you expressing needs, emotions, desires, and problems? Are you following his lead? Are you even willing to follow his lead? Then are you willing to follow his lead as he leads you to sex? Like, it's really simple, guys. It's really simple. So, yes, thank you for asking that follow-up question. So I'm actually going to change the timestamp on that to go a little bit further because that matters. All right, we're going to do 36:19 on that timestamp, and we're going to move on to the next question. Finally, thank you, Mr. Fibb, for helping. All right, so this is a drug-related question. How do uppers and downers using both specifically affect the corners of the mind? Are quadrants involved, or is it consistent for the corners by turbulence and assertiveness? Oh, my God. Turbulence and assertiveness. There is no such thing as turbulence and assertive. You could argue that subconscious focus and unconscious focus is turbulence versus assertive, okay? Assertive being subconscious focus and turbulence being unconscious focus. But, you know, in before Duggo says something in the chat and is like, no, Mr. C.S. Joseph, that is not true. It should actually be this other way or something. Okay, that's fine. We'll see if Duggo says something in the chat. I enjoy Duggo because he happens to correct me on the fly, and he's one of the very few people I allow to correct me in real time. And he just kind of has that position with me because he's a good man. So anyway, and I respect him, and I value his thoughts very much. But anyway, So how do uppers and downers using both specifically affect the corners of the mind? Okay, so if you're using uppers, also known as stims, and caffeine is an upper, tobacco is an upper, it will put you into your subconscious, okay? And then if you're using downers, and that also includes sativa, by the way, marijuana sativa puts you in your subconscious, sativa, okay? Indica, however, because it puts you in the couch, right? Well, you didn't get enough Toa, you did not get enough tobacco. Clearly, you have not enjoyed a fine cigar, okay? That's easy, okay? Like this one. Fine tobacco, and especially if you smoke a cigar quick enough, it'll go to your head real quick, and you'll feel stimmed. But the reality of the situation is that stims will put you in your subconscious. Depressants like alcohol will definitely put you into your unconscious side of your mind. Now, what happens when you mix the two? Well, you end up like a certain soul Templar on the street who's blonde and is coming at C.S. Joseph during his live stream. And it was the recent ENFJ live stream that we had. Actually, you can actually go on the YouTube channel, go to the lives, and then find the recent ENFJ one. And you can watch this guy refer to me as a pedophile on stream, basically, and basically threaten me and almost assault me, basically, on the stream. That's an interesting situation. I'm sure you folks would enjoy watching that drama. But the point is that he has the he had a lot of vodka Red Bulls. Red Bull is a stim, vodka is a depressant. When you mix both of them at the same time, it puts you into your superego, okay? Which is a really bad place to be when it's induced by substances. And it causes you to become insanely abusive, albeit demonic, okay? And in some spiritual circles, they would claim that it actually opens you up to demonic possession because you're doing stims and you know, uppers and downers simultaneously. Not good to be in your superego. So yeah, don't recommend that. I do not recommend that at all. But that is literally how uppers and downers actually work. All right, so we're going to put that at 39 minutes and 55 seconds. Hitting the next one. Next question. How does an ENFP woman survive or help a UDUF ISTJ see the errors in his ways? Okay. What a great question. Because here's the reality. This is a bad question. Why is it a bad question? Because a woman cannot change a man. That's it. Girls, women, ladies, you can't change men. You can't change men at all. You can't. So stop trying. Only men can change men because it is written, as iron sharpens iron, so does one man to another. So stop trying to change a man. Here's the thing. This is really, really important advice for women right here. If a man in your life does not, and if you're considering him from a relationship, but he does not have consistent male friends, if he does not have male friends, he is a loser. He is a weak man by default. Let me say that again. He is a shit man if he does not have male friends, consistent male friends. Mind you, has to be consistent male friends. If he does not have consistent male friends, he is a shit man. You should not be in a relationship with him at all. Why? Because he'll shirk his male burden of performance. He'll be nothing but a weak disappointment to you as a woman. You should avoid him at all costs. This is heavily talked about in the playlist, season 31, on this YouTube channel and on the podcast. And good luck getting through the season 31 playlist as a woman, because it will completely and totally assault all of your feminist ego investments and tell you the truth about life as we know it. But hopefully you can actually handle that. But most women can't handle that. And they end up just going on to Reddit and talking about how much of a sexist asshole C.S. Joseph is, instead of actually taking the truth and the lessons from season 31, also known as Jungian sexuality, and actually considering for a moment that what I'm saying is actually fundamentally true. All right? So make sure that you are paying attention to that, okay? But the reality of the situation is that a woman cannot change a man. And the reason why is magician archetype, which is one of the four archetypes of the mature masculine known as king, warrior, magician, lover. If you'd like to learn more about king, warrior, magician, lover, according to Jungian analytical psychology, I recommend you watch the season 13 playlist, which goes in deep on King, Warrior, Magician, Lover for men, as well as Queen, Mother, Matron, Lover for women. Even though it's kind of a beginner's approach, if you want the more advanced data and the advanced knowledge, I recommend you join our women's group and our men's group, where there are private lectures going into mature femininity and mature masculinity per each group. Just know that for the men are expected to listen to the women's group lectures and the men's group lectures simultaneously, because men have to take responsibility for their relationships. And these groups, they're basically part of our nonprofit, where we're basically rehabilitating men into their masculinity and rehabilitating women into their femininity, basically. If you want to be more of a feminine woman, join the women's group, also known as the cartel. If you want to be more a masculine man, then join the Forge, aka the men's group, basically, as run by our nonprofit that we have for ego hackers. To get access to them, go to discord.gg/egohackers, get into the Discord, get into the groups, go into the requirements channel, do all of the requirements. You will get educated as quickly as possible. And then you can either commiserate with your fellow men and women, or actually utilize them as resources to solve problems in your guys' relationships. It's absolutely important. All right, Diasis, I'm glad you talked about having male friends, but here's the problem. You're an ESTP, bro. And ESTP and INFJ men consistently have this problem where they only have friends with men who are beneath them instead of men who are above them. So this actually can end up causing you to actually not grow, because as you're trying to be the alpha running your wolf pack, basically, they're all men who are technically lesser than you. You need to be in someone else's wolf pack and where you can learn from them so that you can continue to sharpen yourself and become a better man yourself, right? And it's always ESTP men and INFJ men who end up in this endless cycle. So sorry, bro, to call you out, man. But I don't know if that's necessarily how you live your life, but I'm just saying that statistically, that's usually what happens to ESTPs and INFJ men specifically when it comes to their friends, bro. So just make sure that if you're having male friends, that some of your male friends are better than you, smarter than you, more capable than you are, more free than you are, okay? Instead of like, because most ESTP and INFJ men end up feeling insecure around those men, and they end up stunting their own growth just out of insecurity, which is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? You can't do that. You can't do that. You need to surround yourselves with men who are better than you so that you can perform, so you can be a better man. Why? Well, because men care about inequality. Women care about equality, because women care about equality amongst other women. Women see life as this big pie, and they each get their own slice, and they look at each other and be like, well, why do you get that slice? Why does yours have a cherry on it? Or why does yours have whipped cream on it? You see what I'm saying? Like, that's how women act. Men look at life as a big pie, and they're just trying to get their own slice. You know what I'm saying? So because of that, you know, don't act like that. You have to be around, you know, because women care about equality with each other, because women don't like competing with one another. This is why matron energy exists, because women are supposed to be raising each other up to their own level. A woman should look at another woman and see weaknesses in that woman and then teach her how to fill those holes. But guess what? The woman that's perceiving the weaknesses in the other woman, guess what? That woman also has weaknesses. So the other woman that she's helping fill in those holes of weakness should be helping her fill her own holes of weakness. And then they raise each other's value together, okay? This is how matron energy works. It teaches women to be more affiliative instead of pragmatic and compete with each other. Proper mature feminine behavior is elimination of competition, okay? Whereas with men, it's the opposite. It's increasing competition, like, you know, what you see in Fight Club, the movie, okay? Increasing competition, because men are all about inequality. Men care about making other men better than them. Men care about making their children better than them. Men care about making other people better than them. Men are all about inequality, okay? But for some reason, oh, there needs to be equality from the genders. That's literally just feminism allowing women to project their need for equality onto men and holding men to the standard of equality, which ends up reducing the value of those men and actually destroys male masculinity. Yes, fill each other's holes. Do it. So, like seriously, guys, that's a thing. Realize the mistakes that you're making. in that. All right. So the bottom line is, how does an ENFP woman survive helping UDUF ISTJ see the errors in his ways? I'm not even going to bother answering that question because the answer is she doesn't. She does not. Another man does. And how would another man do that? Well, help the ISTJ become subconscious focus. Why? By finding his dilemma function, even though Fib doesn't like me using the term dilemma function, but it's like we're just going to call it dilemma function for now until we call it something else, which is basically whichever function is in cognitive reflection with his masculine primary function. If he's a UDUF ISTJ, that basically means his introverted intuition demon is his masculine primary function, which would mean his introverted sensing hero is basically what we're calling the dilemma function, which really is just the opposite cognitive reflection function, the battleground of titans, basically. If you want to learn more about that, become a journeyman member at csjoseph.life/members and watch the season 18 videos on cognitive reflection, okay, and explains all of this. Season 18, also known as cognitive mechanics, okay? It's cognitive mechanics, okay? That's where it comes from. That's what you should be doing, okay? So UDUF ISTJ basically needs to learn how to become more dutiful and more self-disciplined, and but only men can actually help the ISTJ UDUF person do that so they can become UDSF, which basically means they're not jealous of others, they're not wrathful towards others, and instead of pointing the finger at everyone else, they point the fingers only at themselves and not at everyone else, okay? This is what ISTJs need to do to get out of UDUF, okay? So that should be enough to answer that question at 49 minutes and 13 seconds. Excellent. Moving on to the next question. How does an INTP cope with chronic anxiety, right? Well, where is that chronic anxiety coming from? Oh, that's right. It's coming from two places. One, it's coming from their extroverted feeling inferior, you know, and people not liking them, or they're afraid of people not liking them. Or it's coming from their feminine primary function or their masculine primary function needs not being met. That's it. That's all it is. So how do they cope with it? Well, make sure that those functions' needs are being met. Do that. If you want to learn more about taking responsibility for meeting your own needs and why you should probably watch the season 6 playlist on this channel. The playlists that are watched the least on this YouTube channel, which, however, they are the most valuable playlists for personal growth, as well as a fundamental understanding of gender dynamics, is seasons 4, 6, 13, and 31. Pay attention to those playlists so that you don't end up having a problem, okay? This is absolutely critical. Do that, okay? Make sure you're watching those playlists, okay? Otherwise, how do INTPs from a natural perspective in general cope with chronic anxiety? I don't know, become their own source of self-acceptance. And this is actually talked about heavily and deeply at csjoseph.life/members in the Journeyman membership, specifically the lecture about the demon function, basically all the demon functions, and is the FI demon function. It's in the premium lectures section. Find the specific semen that talk about the demon function. No, the season. Find the specific season that talks about the demon function, right? And then as a result of that, you'll get the answer that you need, which, and like how to become your own source of self-acceptance. That is the answer to that question at 51 minutes and 18 seconds. Awesome. Moving on to next question. All right. How should an ISTP approach his need for acceptance? Okay. Yeah, literally, that is the answer to that question. And if you're an acolyte and you're asking this question, you have access to that lecture. So go watch that lecture, okay? I'm going to add, I'm actually going to add 48 to that question and move on to the next question because that was just easily answered. Moving on to the next one. All right, here is the next question. How to stop being a clown as an ENTP? Oh my God, how to stop being a clown. Are you sure you want to stop being a clown? I mean, let's be honest. Ryan Reynolds, he's a clown, but he's totally sexy. He's sexy as fuck. So why would you want to stop being a clown? It's kind of cool. It kind of actually has a tendency of making some ENTPs desirable. Here's the thing, folks. When it comes to being desirable to other people, when it comes to being an ENTP, ENTPs have this problem. early in life, they start out being cringe as fuck. They're cringe all the time. They cringe people out all the time. So therefore, what happens when an ENTP becomes mature? They stop being cringe, but then they just become intimidating. So basically, the ENTP never wins. They never win. So you start off as cringe, and then you become intimidating. So it still sucks. Congratulations. Y'all played yourselves. But here's the thing. Like, that's just reality. Fim's like, I'm SDSF. I'm not a clown. Well, I mean, a certain INTJ woman that we know may have a different opinion about that, bro. Because regardless of your octagram as an ENTP, you're still a clown in some capacity. You're still a clown. And again, it just always goes from cringe to intimidating. You can't really go around that. So, yeah, I know it's just an opinion, bro. But actually, but still, Fib brings up a good point. So let's actually examine an SDSF ENTP. And a really good one to examine is actually Steve Jobs, okay? He started off pretty cringe early in his life, but then even with him being SDSF, he was super intimidating as the CEO of Apple. Insanely intimidating to the point that people would like complain about it consistently. Talking about what it's like to actually work with Steve Jobs and how intimidating he was all the time, even as an SDSF ENTP. Klaus Michelson is a UDUF. Klaus Michelson is a UDUF ENTP as a fictional character, and then slowly becomes UDSF as part of his character arc within the show The Originals. The Originals is available for watching on Netflix. I highly recommend it. You can also actually watch Klaus Michelson being introduced as a villain first in the show, the prequel show, Vampire Diaries, until I think it's like season 3, episode 40, or season 4, episode 40, where Vampire Diaries moves away from, moves into the Originals, a spinoff series, and then you can continue watching about Klaus from there. No, he's not an ENTJ. Seriously, for all of you who actually care about what Personality Database says, don't be a loser. Personality Database sucks and has no idea what they're doing. So no, Kasim, don't tell me I'm cute. Like, there are people that I would absolutely love telling me I'm cute, and I gotta be honest with you, Kasim, you are not one of those people. No, I'm just gonna stop you there, bro. It's just not gonna happen. It's not going to happen, Mr. Kasim. Nope. And from now on, I'm going to call you Kaz from now on. So you are now Kaz forever. Just letting you know. Kaz it is. All right. That answers that question at 55 minutes and 47 seconds. Moving on to the next one. Oh, my God. How to stop being outcome focused as an INFP woman? Oh, Caroline, she's an ENFJ. Caroline's an ENFJ. So, I do hate everyone, but I also love everyone simultaneously. Welcome to FI Trickster, aka FI Mastery. So just get over it. So how to stop becoming outcome-focused as an INFP woman? You kind of can't. You kind of can't, because your ego and your subconscious and your unconscious are all outcome. INFP is outcome. ESTJ is outcome. ENFJ is outcome. You're triple outcome. It's really, really hard. And this is why INFP women have a really, really hard time expressing their feminine properly, because they don't even realize just how entitled to outcomes they are towards men. And they don't realize how this is emasculating towards men. Because if you're a woman, you're expecting an outcome from a man, you're being emasculating, which means you're being unattractive and undesirable. Ooh, yay. And no man's going to be willing to commit to you. So what I recommend to solve that problem is actually learn how to properly express needs, emotions, desires, and problems, as well as the fifth and sixth expression, which is also expressing gratitude and appreciation. And the sixth expression, which is no woman's favorite expression, it is the expression of obedience to your man. Obedience. And following his leadership and being obedient to his leadership. That's how you avoid outcomes, because your man, even if he's a movement type, even if he's a journey-based type, He still chooses the outcome for you, okay? That's the reality. Now, if he chooses the outcome for you and you don't feel good about that outcome, guess what? Express again, I don't feel good about that outcome. I'm scared, or that doesn't seem valuable, or like, you know, those kinds of things. Just keep expressing, and eventually your man will work it out. You just got to trust his leadership, okay? It's very, very simple, okay? Like, that's just how it is. At Diocese, we haven't done the challenge relationships yet. That content will be coming out later. However, I will tell you, to actually answer your question, the basic concept for your question, bro, is actually contained in the Cutting Edge podcast episode for November 2023. So journeyman membership at csjoseph.life/members. It's $29, bro. Just get in there. Just go watch that, and it'll really, really help you. Like that, understanding what your masculine primary function is versus her feminine primary function, and then just meeting those needs is absolutely critical. But you'll also have to learn how to type her octogram properly. But that's available. That will be available, and that question will be answered in the How to Type Yourself course, which is available now for pre-order, folks, at howtotypeyourself.com. Go check out that course, get the course, learn these concepts. The pre-order pricing, it's basically like half off for pre-orders. You're going to want to get the pre-order pricing. Get it now, because the pre-order pricing is going to double in a couple of weeks, and you're going to want to get in on that. So howtotypeyourself.com to get into that course, so you can learn how to type octogram for other people. Check that out. I highly, highly recommend it. It's kind of interesting because I get notifications on my phone while I'm streaming when people are actually buying the course, and I actually see the notifications going on my phone for people buying the course, which is cool. I love that. So yeah, if for some reason you did buy the course and you did not buy the masterclass, but you're changing your mind and you do want to buy the masterclass, just send an email to support@csjoseph.life and they'll get you the link, or you can open a ticket in Discord for our support server. Which is at discord.gg/egohackers, and then just go into the support channel and open a ticket from there. So yeah, awesome. That answers that question, how to stop being outcome-focused as an INFP woman. I'll give you guys some additional resources. As an INFP woman, read the following books: Irresistibly Feminine, Worthy Woman, Show Him Your Heart, and Inspire His Devotion, all written by Zach Rohde, which is ZakRohedde. Zach Rohde, check it out, you can kind of go from there. And then also that time stamp is at 60 minutes and 27 seconds. Excellent. Moving on to the next question. All right, how would UDUF superego focus affect a golden pairing? This is an octogram compatibility question. Octogram compatibility is actually, finally, for golden pairs at least, thoroughly explained also in the Cutting Edge November 2023. And since these are Acolyte questions, Acolyte members do have access to that already. So the answer to this question is just go watch the Cutting Edge November 2023 episode, and you will get the octogram compatibility question answered for golden pairs right there. How would UDUF superego focus affect a golden pairing? Basically, it has everything to do with your masculine primary and your feminine primary functions, basically, and how well they actually match. And that is gone through in detail in that episode. csjoseph.life/members. Become a journeyman member if you want to watch it but don't have that. Awesome. 61 minutes, 36 seconds. Moving on to the next question. All right. Next question is, if someone experiences brain trauma, how does this reset their cognitive development? How long would it take for their development to change? And where specifically would they have to have trauma to their brain for their cognitive development to change? Okay, so I don't know the answer to where specifically they would have to have trauma to their brain for their cognitive development to change. That would be a question for Dr. Dario Nardi, actually, if he was familiar with Octogram. He would be the person that I would refer to answer that specific question. I don't know. I don't know that. However, there are other questions I do know, which is, how long, well, not really, how long would it take for their development to change? It really, like, the brain just needs time to heal. It's just going to take as long as it takes, basically. However, the first rendition, if someone experiences brain trauma, how does this reset the cognitive development? Very good question. I actually have a very close friend of mine. He just had brain surgery. I was trying to get him on the show. He actually agreed to be on the show. Very awesome fellow. He's an ESTP. His name is Adrian. But when I first met him and I first typed him, he was acting like an INTP. Seriously, he was acting like an INTP. And oh my goodness. And people that had known him from the past, and they would describe his behavior to me, he was an unconscious developed ESTP, but he was hyper into his extroverted feeling, like hardcore, after his brain surgery. So he actually turned out to be like reset and after his brain surgery, and he ended up being an SDSF octagram as an ESTP. When he was actually considered by many around him based on the stories that they would tell me about him and how he behaved before his brain surgery from a third-party perspective, these people claim that he was unconscious developed. So the bottom line is that it does happen. I don't exactly know how it happens. I just know that it does happen, right? Well, I actually talked about uppers and downers in a previous question early in the stream, bro, and you're bringing up marijuana, and I actually talk about that there. So that's just kind of where it's at. So make sure you guys do that. All right, so I am going to mark that question done because I answered it to the best of my ability. 64 minutes and 26 seconds. Awesome. Moving on to the next question. Let's see how many we can get through tonight. All right, next question. If you are with your golden pair, are you able to bypass mastering your unconscious by utilizing their strengths and focusing on the subconscious and superego? Technically, yes. On paper, yes. If you're ignoring, for example, if you're ignoring octagram and looking at just basic cognitive functions from a golden pair to golden pair, yeah, sure. Yes, technically, but that's not always the case. Now, there was a live stream called How Golden Pair Relationships Work that was available recently. It was also posted to the Acolyte membership section today. It's actually available today. You can go watch it today, okay? It's in the Acolyte membership, or you can find it on the YouTube channel in the live streams. If you can't find it in the YouTube and live streams, it's because it was unlisted, okay? And it probably was. But the answer to that, in terms of how golden pair relationships work, you would have to refer to that in order to answer this question halfway. The other half of the answer to this question is, once again, contained in the Cutting Edge November 2023 episode. Okay, so just I'm referring you to other information, so you can watch that. Get into the membership, csjoseph.life/members, and $29 a month to get access to all that content behind that area of the paywall to that end. 66 minutes for the answer to that question. Moving on to the next one, okay? Because there's a lot of questions, folks, so I'm not going to be able to go into detail when I have other questions to answer, and the questions are already contained. The answers to the questions are already contained in existing content. Go watch it. All right, awesome. Next question. I am a 21-year-old subconscious-focused ENTP man. How can I be more attractive to the women I approach? I often fall into nice guy syndrome. I don't know if there's any way to become shadow focused. You mentioned they are more attractive to women. Nope, that's false. I may have said that in the past, but that's entirely false. This is actually an area that I would retract that previous statement. I no longer believe that. Again, Cutting Edge November 2023 would contain the answer to this question, because how can I be more attractive to the women I approach? You want to basically find out what their feminine primary function is and meet the needs of that function. Now think about it this way. Women are expressing needs, emotions, desires, and problems. Needs, emotions, desires, and problems represent what we always talk about: input, process, output, feedback. If a woman's needs aren't being met, and every feminine primary function is an extroverted function, so it needs something extra. It's like a container. It's like a receptacle that has a need that needs to be fulfilled. It needs to be satisfied by a man. And I'm kind of projecting myself when I say that because I'm cognitive origin of satisfaction. But you guys catch my drift. Every single person has every cognitive origin anyway. It's just which ones are more primary versus which ones are more secondary. So the reality of the situation is every man still has a responsibility of providing satisfaction in some capacity to a woman, to a woman that he's in a sexual relationship with, especially. So the point is that the primary need a woman has is for her feminine primary as well as her feminine secondary functions being met by a man. Now, if those needs are not being met by a man, what's going to happen? It's going to cause her to have feelings about it. And then she's going to have to express her feelings. Zach Rohde talks about in his books, Zakroedde, Irresistibly Feminine, Worthy Woman, Show Him Your Heart, and Inspire His Devotion. In his books, as well as his other book, Don't Let Her Lead, which is specific to men, and I recommend men read all five, or as women, just read the four female books, basically. But because Zach Rohde figured out that women have far more of a problem than men do, actually. Because masculine idealism, there's no shortage of masculine idealism in the world. And I'm quoting Stephanie, the leader of the women's group, in saying that. But if a woman's primary function is not being met, if her secondary function as well is not being met, she's going to have feelings about it. And Zach Rohde teaches how men need to anticipate a woman's feelings. Now, if a man is meeting her needs up front, she's not going to end up having those feelings because he's anticipating her needs ahead of time. And then guess what happens? Then she's not going to have, because here's the thing. If her need is not being met with those two functions, then she's going to have feelings. And then she's going to express those feelings. And those feelings are going to have to be met. But if those feelings aren't going to be met, it's going to leave something to be desired. Yay. It's going to leave something to be desired. Okay. And so when that desire actually happens, it then becomes the man's responsibility to meet those desires. But if those desires are not met, guess what's going to happen? It's going to create a problem that the man is going to have to solve. So there's four levels of expression. And if your woman is getting to the four levels of expression, all the way down from needs, emotions, desires, and problems, you're probably failing as a man. You're probably a shit man at that point. Don't be a shit man. No shit man allowed. Seriously, no shit men. And it's so funny because we just posted today, actually, the Warrior Part 1 presentation to the men's group that we did in the Forge for the men's group. And it's literally titled No Shit Men, right? Don't be a shit man. Anticipate your woman's needs. Understand what her feminine primary function is, her feminine secondary function is. Meet those needs ahead of time. Anticipate those needs, okay? Lead her and lead in such a way with your masculine idealism so that you are meeting those needs ahead of time. So she doesn't have to have feelings. So there's nothing left to be desired. And so it doesn't become a problem. And if you absolutely don't solve the problem, guess what? You're a shit man. You're not masculine. You're a boy. You're a loser. A big loser. So don't do it. Okay? Don't do it. Just don't. So that's a really big deal. So if you're a 21-year-old subconscious focused ENTP man, how do you make yourself more attractive to the women I approach? Well, you give them the gift of your time, attention, and resources in such a way where you're fulfilling her needs. You would just have to psychoanalyze them properly and also with their nature and identify their personality type. And then you'll have to identify their nurture, their octogram. But guess what? We have a course coming out that helps you do that, at howtotypeyourself.com, which is available for pre-order right now. Go to howtotypeyourself.com, get the freaking course, and get educated on how you can type them, their personality type, accurately, and their octogram accurately, so that you can actually easily deduce what their feminine primary and feminine secondary functions actually are, because the man that meets those with his time, attention, and resources, his gifts to his woman, that makes him the most attractive to her. The difference is, hopefully she's not a shit woman who just takes your time, attention, and resources away from you, which I talk about at length earlier within the context of this stream itself. So you'll want to watch the beginning of the stream as well to get the answer to that question. So get how to type yourself the course at howtotypeyourself.com. Okay, step one. Step two, watch the November Cutting Edge episode for 2023. And then step three is watch this entire stream, especially towards the beginning, especially where it's really lagging out or whatever, and then get the answer to that question. And you have all the tools that you need to solve this problem, to make yourself as attractive as you can as an ENTP man. Oh, wait, it's the same process and approach for like all men. It's not hard. It's so funny watching like all the red pillars out there, you know, talking about these things and how they just project themselves onto everyone. It's so funny, like watching Myron Gaines, for example, on the Fresh and Fit podcast as he recruits girls for his podcast. And did you notice that the majority of the girls that he recruits for his podcast are extroverted sensors? And that the majority of the girls that he recruits for his podcast are also wayfarers, you know, women that are compatible with him. So that's the problem, because we have this thing called cognitive projection, that the people that we attract, or at least the people that we can convince to be on our podcast with us, are actually women that are compatible with us. And the things that we actually teach, our so-called pickup artist techniques or techniques on how to handle women, are actually based on his own type as a man. So the majority of the advice that he's giving actually really only benefits NTP men and not other men. Oh, wait, Rollo Tomasi has that problem because he's an INTJ and he's giving advice to men as if they were INTJs themselves. That's the problem, folks. When you're consuming content, you better actually understand what personality type they have, as well as what their octagram is. That way, you understand how biased their advice actually is, because they're always going to project their own persona, their own nature, and their own nurture, and claim that it's a solution for everybody, when the reality situation is it's not. Oh my God. So make sure you keep track. Corey Wayne's advice benefits ENFPs. He's an ENFP. Neil Strauss in the book The Game, his advice, guess what? It benefits ENTPs the most. You see what I'm saying, folks? You got to understand the psyches of the people that you're listening to so that you know if you're actually going to benefit from them or not, and move on to people who actually share the same psyche as you so you can actually benefit from them. It's not hard. Okay? Do that. Ty Lopez is an ENFP. His advice benefits ENFPs the most. Who's good for INFPs? Robert Greene. Hands down. Robert Greene. 48 Laws of Power guy. All right. So I answered this question to all hell. This is 75 minutes, 13 seconds. Moving on. Okay. Do INTJs get mood swings? Yes. Yes, they do. They have introverted feeling child. Trying to save this cigar. It's not working out so well. Yeah, Simon Sinek, he is an INFJ. So he benefits INFJ men the most. Teal Swan is an INFJ woman. She benefits INFJ women the most. Go to csjoseph.life/famous, okay, to figure that out, okay? Come on. Yeah, I don't care, Kia. I really don't care. I don't care if it bothers you. Yes, INTJs have mood swings. It comes from introverted feeling child. Ooh, ouch, ouch, ouch. I'm just gonna set that down. That cigar is done. We're done with that cigar. So yeah, INTJ mood swings. Yes, they get mood swings. It's usually because of their introverted feeling child. Here's the thing, though, if they are an INTJ man and they end up having a mood swing, guess what? They're not being masculine. They should actually learn to use their SI demon to have some self-discipline, because being calm, cool, and collected is a masculine trait. Rage or having mood swings is a feminine trait. So get over it. And if your INTJ woman is having mood swings, it's because you're not meeting her feminine primary and her feminine secondary functions. Again, Cutting Edge, November 2023 in the Journeyman membership at csjoseph.life/members will answer that question. Understand universal compatibility theory. That's how you deal with INTJ mood swings in women. Now, there could be something hormonal going on with them where they're actually having something physically wrong with them. And actually, one of my INTJ female clients recently informed me about a condition called PMDD, which actually looks very similar to borderline personality disorder or narcissistic personality disorder, but it's not. It's actually just something that deals with their hormones and causes them to act as if they do have these personality disorders when they actually don't. It is mood swing related and mood swing oriented. You will have to learn how to optimize her hormones. To do this, eat organic non-GMO foods to begin with. Make sure that you're using the Bobbi approved app to barcode scan every single piece of food that you allow in your house. That way, her body is not being poisoned. And also, that includes cosmetics, shampoos, conditioners, body wash, every chemical that's in your home could be estrogenic, okay? Like lavender, if you have lavender soap and you're a man using lavender soap, guess what? You're an idiot because lavender destroys male hormones. Stop consuming lavender. Stop putting lavender on your body. You're a moron. Don't do it. What the hell is your problem? Like literally, don't do that. Okay, so just keep in mind. Yeah, so yeah, don't lather up on lavender. That's actually dumb. Lavender is estrogenic. It increases estrogen. Okay, understand how we live in a toxic society and INTJ women are going to have mood swings and probably even develop PMDD because of this really bad situation. In fact, this INTJ girl, she's known as Sparkle on the Ego Hackers Discord. She's very, very well educated in PMDD. She's an excellent resource. You could probably DM her and whatnot and get as a woman and ask her questions, maybe even as a man if you suspect that your woman has PMDD. And I'm sure she would be happy to share those resources with you. She's got a very kind heart. She's very compassionate. And she's trying, you know, I'm sure she'd be happy to assist you all from a PMDD perspective, you know, because matron energy, helping other women, right? And yes, all FI users are ultimately moody. But if you're a man, you can't allow your mood to cause yourself to lose composure. Women do, and that's just natural. And it's all part of their needs, emotions, desires, and problems, potentially not even actually being met by men in their life. You might want to pay attention to that. All right, we're at 80 minutes and 8 seconds, which is cool. And for a second here, guys, I need to actually turn on my network. Where is it? All right, there it is. Okay, so I'm turning that network on. Actually, no, I just realized that's stupid. It might actually disrupt the stream. So we don't need to disrupt that stream, okay. All right, cool. So the next question. Here's the next question. Next question is, it seems like I don't have a cognitive focus and I cognitive transition so much between different sides of my mind. I can't tell what my ego is. For example, when I'm with a ton of strangers and unfamiliar social situations, I go into FE mode and start acting like a high FE user to get me through them. Are there any good tips I can use to pinpoint which side of my mind is my ego? The problem is that this is a very complex question. And you have to consider octagram as well, because in the same way that you can transition to the other four sides of your mind, which is your ego, subconscious, unconscious, and superego, you can also transition into your octagram as well. However, when identifying your octagram, which we're going to be releasing the Octagram 3.0 and the How to Type Yourself course, which is available at howtotypeyourself.com right now for pre-order, and the price will double in just a couple weeks, probably about 2 weeks' time, it's going to double. So get your pre-orders in now while you still can. How to Type Yourself, it's a course we're going to be discussing how to type yourself and others from a type grid perspective, as well as the Octagram. You can use the Octagram 3.0, which is explained within this course, so that you can identify your octagram. You can even use the octagram to verify your own type. You can, you know, to verify what you're seeing within yourself from a type grid perspective, okay? And this is absolutely crucial because you'll actually see whether or not, you know, your octagram is, you know, exposing, okay, These are actually my deadly sins. These are actually my living virtues. This is my shadow pole. This is my aspiration pole. These are my two temple wheels. These are my cognitive origins. These are my primary ones, etc. This is what I identify with. This is my octagram. And that proves that I'm one of these two types because each temple dyad has the same temple wheels. And then you could actually figure out and eliminate 14 of the 16 types on the type grid just from an octagram perspective. And then from there, find out from other people if you're more extroverted or more introverted. They'll tell you, and then you can be like, okay, I'm actually the introverted one of this dyad pair, or I'm the extroverted version of this dyad pair, etc. What's up, Sunny Boy? Yo. So anyway, the point is that the good tips that you can use to pinpoint which side of my mind is my ego, literally, you should just use the octagram to reverse engineer your type. That would be my answer to this complex question in the most simplest terms. And again, you can utilize the course as a resource to actually do that. All right, we are doing that at 83 minutes and 6 seconds for this particular one. 6 seconds, cool. All right, so the next question is, what does a UDUF ISTP look like from demonic to angelic transition? This question is actually answered in the Ego Hacking Your Fear. It goes in deep on the demon versus angel approach. This is available at egohackingyourfear.com. I highly recommend you get that course. If you do purchase the masterclass at howtotypeyourself.com, which you get the course, then you get the opportunity to land on the sales page after you get the course to get the masterclass. If you get the masterclass, you'll be taken to the Ego Hacking Your Fear sales page, which has a huge sale on Ego Hacking Your Fear as a course to get the absolute best pricing for Ego Hacking Your Fear. Or you can pay full price if you want by going to egohackingyourfear.com and just getting the course if you don't want to get How to Type Yourself, etc., as that course as well. But the bottom line is that you can utilize that as a resource. Another resource that you could use is in the Journeyman Members area, which specifically talks about the ISTP. P's demon function, which is FI demon, and explains how you can what it looks like from a demonic to angelic transition there, which really comes down to getting a level of self-acceptance, which is a little bit easier for ISTP UDUF men to do because their masculine primary function is actually introverted feeling demon, versus the UDUF ISTP woman. And her feminine primary function is actually extroverted intuition trickster, right? So that is that's basically how I would answer that question. Just utilize those other resources and you will get the answer that you need from there. And that is 85 minutes and 2 seconds, okay? All right, cool. Next question, which is the most annoying question, actually. It's the most annoying question that I have on the list here, which is, quote, key lessons from the Tate brothers for an INTJ, especially when looking to start their own business. Okay, first of all, I don't know why people assume that I consume Tate brother content. I really actually don't. So I'm not an expert on the Tate brothers by any way, shape, or form. I don't know. But when it comes to looking for a person to start their own business, you could use my advice for starting a business, which is go to csjoseph.life/reading, scroll down and read all of the books that I've listed there, the Entrepreneurship 16, okay? Now, I don't like the book Traction in that list, but that book actually really helps FITE user entrepreneurs. And this is an INTJ question. They are an FITE user, so I would actually recommend that they read the book Traction. But there's two additional books that are not in the list, and that is 100M Offers by Alex Hormozi, which would be the 17th book. And the 18th book is The Lynchpin by Russell Brunson specifically. So those are the Entrepreneurship 18. And hopefully, if my team is listening, that we get those links with our Amazon affiliate links added to that page so that we can have the 18 books actually listed there. So it's really important. Again, I'm not an expert on the Tate brothers. I don't really know much about the Tate brothers at all. So I cannot answer the question in the spirit it was asked other than just refer you to these other resources, which in my opinion are actually superior to what the Tate brothers would potentially be offering. So just keep that in mind. So that question is answered at 87:05. So 87 minutes and 5 seconds, which is awesome. All right, cool. The next question is, what can ESFJs do to be less critical and contemptuous to the people closest to them? Okay, what causes an ESFJ to be critical and contemptuous to begin with? Okay, and that is their extroverted sensing critic. So it's, well, sure, Damien, I understand that the Tate brothers do that, but like, the thing is that you can get a lot of copywriting things from reading Jim Edwards' book, Copywriting Secrets, which a lot of the Tate brothers utilize that as a resource, as well as the previous book in that chain of custody, which is the book Copy That Sells, which is not the correct title for that. But that's why I recommend people read in the Entrepreneurship 16, also known as the Entrepreneurship 18, Copywriting Secrets by Jim Edwards, because that's honestly the best you can get. And then just supplement that with ChatGPT and 4.0, and you're good to go from that as an additional to that question. So what can ESFJs do to be less critical and contemptuous? Okay, so literally understand that if you as an ESFJ see yourself as a top performer, you cannot project that onto other people and expect other people to be top performers as well. And if you're seeing other people and you're criticizing other people's performance, ask them for criticism towards you and find out if your performance could actually improve. Because that's the problem with the ESFJs. They have TI inferior and they're very dismissive of other people because they're afraid that their voice doesn't matter to other people. They're afraid that their thoughts are wrong. That's oftentimes why ESFJs walk around feeling like they're stupid or they're afraid they're stupid. And the number one way to hurt an ESFJ is to tell the ESFJ that they're stupid. That's the number one way to hurt an ESFJ. Don't do it. It's like actually stupid of you to tell an ESFJ that they are stupid. But they're also very dismissive because they have extroverted thinking demon, which is in cognitive orbit of introverted thinking inferior. If you want to learn more about cognitive orbit and how it works, make sure you watch the season 18 playlist, Cognitive Mechanics, which is available in the Journeyman members area, okay? That being said, some of the Cognitive Orbit episodes may actually be freely available on YouTube in the Season 18 playlist. So go check there first before you commit to buying the Journeyman membership at csjoseph.life/members, because some Cognitive Mechanics episodes are being released publicly over time, and the Cognitive Orbit episodes may already actually be publicly available. So make sure you're checking the Season 18 playlist on the YouTube channel first and foremost to get that figured out. So you can see how cognitive orbit works. But extroverted thinking demon causes ESFJs to be dismissive of other people. They expect everyone else to listen to them, but they don't really listen to anybody. And it's one of the reasons why ESFJs are actually so sparse within the ego hacker community, because from their point of view, if they've never heard it before, then it's not real. But, which, if you think about it, is actually ignorance. That's actually one of the definitions of ignorance. So that's a problem. So where do you go to learn about cognitive battlegrounds? You learn about that's also known as cognitive reflection. That's available in Season 18 Cognitive Mechanics. Again, check the Season 18 playlist on the YouTube channel or in the I need to inform her that I am on video. 1 second. I am recording right now. I can't take your call. All right, cool. We did that. Great. And I'm going to set my thing to do not disturb. So, yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Yes. Anyway. So what ends up happening is the ESFJ has to learn how to ask for criticisms from other people. The ENSFJ has to learn the healthy habit of actually asking for feedback on their own personal performance. And this will actually cause them to be less critical and contemptuous towards other people. That is the answer to that question. And that question is answered at 91 minutes and 31 seconds. Okay, let's see here. 91 minutes and 31 seconds. Okay. Let me count how many questions I've answered so far just to make sure that I'm staying on track. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. 17 questions answered. All right, so moving on to the next question. The next question, which is very large, but let's get through it. All right, what actually determines intelligence is the question. Albert Einstein was an INTP. Socrates was an ENTP. Does this mean that everyone shares the same ego as these people are also as intelligent as them? No, it just means they have the potential to be as intelligent as them. I wonder what those people's octagrams are because that actually matters. I don't think this is true because these people wouldn't be so special if they were that common. So that means that the deciding factor is either their nurture or that people are born with stronger or weaker cognitive functions than others of their type. For example, one INTP was born with a stronger TI hero than another. Which one do you subscribe to and why? And maybe it's a combo of both, or there's a third explanation I haven't thought of. Excited to see your response. It's literally nurture. It's literally your octagram. Your octagram actually determines your level of capability as part of your type. But each octagram itself, based on, you know, your octagram variant or your octagram neutral expression of your type, you still can become the absolute best version of that variant who walks the earth. It just depends on how much you apply yourself, literally. That's it. It just depends on how much you apply yourself. That's all it is. But you have to really know your octagram and understand how your octagram works and find other successful people who share your type and your octagram at the same time so that you can basically follow in their footsteps, do what they did essentially, or do what they've done but better basically, and then you'll be able to come up with it from there. Okay, the answer to that question is at 94 minutes. Cool. Next question. All right. 9TJ question. Oh my God. I've answered this question so many times. What are INTJs actually good at? By this, I mean, what area does their personality allow them to thrive in? For example, you've previously said that ENFPs are the best at sales. INTJs are good at anything and everything. They're the jack of all trades and the master of all. It really comes down to what they focus on. INTJ focus. Whatever interests the INTJ, and if they just stay focusing on what interests them and focus on that, you know, for it is written, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might. And I hero focus, just focus on that skill and you will master that skill. Read the book Mastery by Robert Greene to learn more from that and learn how to do that. It literally comes down to practice, all right? And Fib brings up a very good point. It is all about practice. That's why our house motto is no fun, more practice, okay? And today I've been practicing the helix, and I actually got, I'm getting double helix down pretty well for my butterfly knife skills, double helix. But I'm trying to learn infinite helix, which is extremely difficult, but I'm not giving up. But it comes down to practice. Now, if an INTJ stops practicing the skill, they're going to lose the skill. That's the difference. They can master any skill, but they have to keep practicing it forever in order to maintain their mastery. As soon as they stop practicing, they'll lose the skill. That's what it comes down to. So what are INTJs actually good at? The answer is literally everything, provided they apply themselves, they focus, and they also practice. 95 minutes and 48 seconds for this question. Moving on to the next one. What are some ways for extroverted feeling users to get high quality, honest feedback? Well, you're a TI user because you're an FE user, which means you have a tendency of being prideful or ignorant. What is the ignorance of TI? Making decisions based on relying on old, outdated information. Making decisions based on bad information, low quality information, right? Or making decisions based on preferred information, that which FITE users are afraid of the most, because that means you have an echo chamber in your head, basically, as an FE user. So what is the best way an FE user can get high quality, honest feedback? Well, you humble yourself enough to ask for it. But don't just ask for it from one particular source, a source that you're comfortable with. No, ask everyone, especially your enemies, okay? Find your enemy and ask them, and they'll give you the most honest feedback that you need. Seriously, that's how you do it. That's literally how you do it. Find the person, if you're a TIFE user, find the person that you don't like the most and ask them. That's literally how you do it. That's how you do it. Oh, you know, I'm on fire, you know, ka-chow. Anyway, all right, so, okay, let's see here. That is 97 minutes and 28 seconds. All right, next one. What are the primary traits or behaviors by which someone can distinguish a shadow-focused ENFP, INFJ versus their cognitive opposite? Shadow-focused? Okay, yeah, it's easy. Are they outwardly wrathful? Do they point the finger at everybody else? That's literally it. Do they point the finger at everyone else and blame other people, or do they blame themselves first? Or are they very jealous and always consistently wanting what other people have? Okay, jealousy, also lusting after what other people have. You see what I'm saying? That's what it comes down to. That's literally it. That's the answer to the question. Those are the primary traits, okay? So 98 minutes, 23 seconds. It is getting cold AF outside. It is cold right now. Woo, it's cold. Whew, it is really cold. Time to put the hood on. Hoods, plural. Whew, it is cold. Let's see what the temperature is right now. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is cold. It is almost freezing. Very close. A couple of degrees. All right. What constitutes an NJ society? Well, Japan. Japan constitutes an NJ society. But basically, NJ society is based on innovation. Innovation. Innovation from an intellectual perspective. Or preach it. Preach it. Yes. Yes, very much so. Oh yeah, that would be nice. So NJ society is basically they're constantly focused on innovation and allowing for innovation to happen. And the Japanese do this the best out of every culture on the planet. They are the number one culture that's focused on innovation. That's why they are an NJ society, creating an environment for innovation to take place. And it's usually NPs that are the innovators, but the NJs create the environment for innovation to actually take place. So that's what ultimately constitutes an NJ society, keeping an environment open for allowing for innovation. That's what that's all about. Okay, let's see here. All right, we are at 100 minutes right now. 100 minutes. Let's see here. Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think. All right, cool. All right, that is it for tonight's stream and this Q&A session for Acolytes. This stream will be taken down, and it will be put up in the Acolyte members section for you all who are Acolyte members to watch later. So if you want to get access to that, go to csjoseph.life/members, become a journeyman member, and then you have an opportunity to upgrade to Acolyte from there. And also, guys, don't forget our new course, which is How to Type Yourself at howtotypeyourself.com, is available for pre-order right now. And it's basically half off, and the price will basically be doubled in about 2 weeks' time. You might want to get in on that course while you still can. So check that out. Anyway, folks, thanks for watching and listening. And I'll see you guys on the next episode or the next stream. Later.